Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 16th of November, 2015, the podcast that sings with mockingjays. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Chris Hangartner. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Shane.
Before we get started, I just want to take one moment, and I don't want to politicize this or anything, and there's still so much that we don't know about it, but I just want to say that our hearts go out to the people of Paris and their families and loved ones of the victims of the horrendous terrorist attacks yesterday.
Oh, yeah. It actually just occurred, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, right?
It was last night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, something like 128 dead at the last count.
Yeah, I did a little research on that. The Paris Police Department, you know, finally managed to kill the guys, you know, after a raid, although we still have yet to identify them and we don't know what their motivation was.
Well, I read they killed 8, but they were still looking for a few more.
Yeah, we don't know what's going on in there. And it's kind of sad, though, because people are already politicizing the event.
We finally found someone who's a bigger scumbag than the gun control nuts, which is all those, "See, we told you we shouldn't have let the refugees in."
Yeah, I mean, I am willing to bet, just because it's kind of a trend that goes on, that whoever did it probably were Islamic extremists, but that doesn't give you an excuse to ban all Syrians from coming in.
Right. Well, apparently there are multiple eyewitnesses who said they shouted Allahu Akbar.
Well, yeah, you know, obviously, you know, I mean, it's Islam extremism. I wouldn't be surprised, but, you know, again, that's not an excuse, you know, for barring all the Syrians from coming in, because the vast majority of them are good people who are just trying to escape what's going on in Syria.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, that flood of refugees, it might have allowed some terrorists to slip through. I mean, the best place to hide a tree is in a forest.
Yeah. But still, you know, the point is,
yeah, you can't blame the refugees for the actions of these terrorists.
Yeah. Not to mention the sad truth is that, and I just wish so many immigration policy people would just accept this, is that you are going to have bad people coming in. There's nothing you can do, but it's just that I think it's wrong for us as a society to punish an overwhelming majority for what a small percent of the people who come in here do.
Right. And then people are saying, you know, oh, well, it's because Islam is evil and Muslim values are incompatible, and yet there are like tons of Muslims who are coming out and completely condemning these attacks and saying this is not representative of our religion.
Yeah, there's even Islamic organizations that are dedicated to ending the Islam extremism, and they're all for, you know, drawing Muhammad. They're against declaring a jihad. They're for equal rights for women, but they're still dedicated Muslims.
All right, so let's perchlorinate the news of the bogus. Now, this first one, though, is going to be news to no one. The monthly caps that the big broadband providers put on most of us have nothing to do with congestion at all, but now there's a leaked document from Comcast confirming it.
Oh boy, what did Comcast do again this time?
Well, it echoes comments from industry lobbyist and former FCC chair Michael Powell, things he said a couple of years ago when he said it was really, quote, to fairly monetize a high fixed cost. So, oh, it's not about congestion, it's about fairness. And that didn't really make it any more persuasive.
Yeah, that's...
But these leaked documents make the case clear. I didn't link to them because every time someone puts them up, Comcast makes DMCA takedown requests. But search around for them, I'm sure you can find it. But these documents are about what their support personnel should say to callers. For example, you don't call it a data cap, you call it a data usage plan.
Yeah, it's just like what was that one newspeak that the politicians used one time for spying?
Domestic surveillance? Or...
Yeah, yeah. We're not spying on you. We're just domestically surveying the area for bad people.
Yeah, and they also specifically say that their support personnel should not tell customers it's about managing congestion, because it's not. It expressly says it's not about congestion. Instead, they're supposed to say it's about, quote, fairness and providing a more flexible policy to our customers.
And that, Comcast, is the reason why you have one of the worst customer service programs out there.
Worse than the IRS.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was a few years ago that Comcast took some pretty bad infamy when several people were calling in and showing videos complaining that, you know, they were saying our network box wasn't working, so Comcast sent the guy to repair it, and he fell asleep on our couch for several hours while he was supposed to be repairing it.
Or they'll say, now be home between 12 and 3, and if you're not home, and then they get there at like 4:30 or something.
Yeah.
So this more flexible policy is something new that Comcast is apparently doing. where they're going to charge an extra $10 for each 50 gigabytes a customer goes above the 300 gigabyte cap, which is something else they're saying, like, oh, it's not a cap. We're not cutting you off. We're just charging you extra for going over it.
Wow. Well, they have a virtual monopoly, so they don't care because they don't have to.
Oh, exactly. And customers will have the option to pay an extra $30 to $35 for the unlimited plan.
So you're basically screwed either way. You got to pick your poison.
Right. And it would be one thing if they said, okay, all you people who aren't using that much bandwidth, we'll give you a break. But no, no one's paying less than they were before, no matter how little bandwidth they're using.
Yep, and I'm pretty sure somewhere there's a Comcast guy who's probably thinking, oh, well, if you don't like Comcast, why don't you form your own different communications company? Oh, that's right, you can't afford to form your own communications company because of all the regulations. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think we've quoted that South Park episode a lot more than any other.
Oh, yeah, but it is true, you know, I mean, there's so many rules and regulations that makes opening a competing communications band, you know, almost impossible. If you try, you're just going to get attacked by the FCC for running a communications network without the proper permits.
They've also got some points in here where their math just doesn't add up. For example, they're telling their support personnel to tell customers that with 300 gigabytes a month, you can, quote, stream between 117 and 289 two-hour movies depending on HD or SD. So that sounds like a lot, right? But even at that low estimate, that ends up being just 3 megabits per second, whereas Netflix requires 7.2 megabits for high def.
Yeah.
Yeah, their low estimate would only support standard quality on Netflix.
So Comcast, you not only fail at caring about your customers, you fail at math too.
Yeah, they're deliberately directing their support personnel to give their customers misinformation.
Yeah. You know, when you come to think of it, it almost makes me feel kind of sorry for some of those, you know, customer service people that work for Comcast, because they sound like good people. It's just that the higher-ups, you know, are giving them all these bad instructions.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're the ones setting policy for the company or anything.
Yeah, you know, I've actually heard from some people who work for customer service, you know, that have said that's the toughest part about being a customer service, is that you legitimately want to help these people, but when the higher-ups of the company are constantly telling you, saying, no, don't do this for them, it's against our policy, there's not a lot you can do.
But like you said, that's what happens when you don't have competition.
Yep, you can charge whatever you want and do whatever you want because people are going to pay for it.
Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.bogosity.tv. So we've talked before about the top secret report on the CIA's secret prison program. They released a 500-page summary of it to the public last year. Senator Dianne Feinstein urged the administration to read the report, so actually something we're in agreement with Senator Feinstein about.
Wow, what a rare case.
Yeah. But guess what? So far, they haven't. Not only has no one in the Obama administration read the report, they haven't even been taken out of the envelopes. The FBI hasn't even retrieved their copy of it. It's still in the Justice Department's safe. And the State Department locked up their copy and marked it Congressional Record, Do Not Open, Do Not Access.
Something tells me it's going to stay there for a while.
Yeah, because the Justice Department has prohibited officials from even opening the envelopes. Basically just keeping everyone in the dark about what's been going on, even if they're in charge of America's counterterrorism efforts.
It's stupid. I mean, it doesn't make sense from a military standpoint. You think that if you want to fight your war more effectively, that everyone, you know, who's going to get involved in this program should have access to it, but nope.
Well, as awkward as it felt being on the same side as Senator Feinstein, things are kind of back in alignment because I now get to go back to being against my Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina. He's head of the Intelligence Committee, and he demanded that the Obama administration return every single copy of the report to the Senate and said it was nothing more than, quote, a footnote in history.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure all those people who are getting the shit beaten out of them in Guantanamo would agree with you.
Mm.
That's another funny thing, is that Obama promised all these nice things and people thought, you know, America was going to return to peaceful. Nope. Gitmo's still active. We still got troops in Africa and the Middle East. In fact, he's increased some of those programs.
So the central conclusion of this report is that all of the, here's more newspeak, enhanced interrogation, we've talked about that before, like waterboarding, sleep deprivation, other things like that, were not only far more brutal than people have been told, but they really didn't even work.
Yeah.
So the ACLU has sued for access to the document, but the point of contention is who owns the document. You can sue the executive branch to release their records via the public records laws, but legislative branch records aren't susceptible to that. So if it's still a Senate document, then it can't be released. Only if it's an executive document.
Oh, what happened to you, checks and balances? What happened?
But it's in some kind of weird sort of limbo because the report was given to the executive branch, but it's still the Senate report. And if they haven't even opened it and read it, does that mean that it's not an executive branch document? If they do open it and read it, does that make it an executive branch document and therefore the public records laws apply?
They want it to be confusing so people will just give up and not talk about it.
Yeah, and the Justice Department official said that's why they're saying no one gets to open it and read it, because they don't want to get in the middle of this quagmire and get into the position where, oh, well, this is what, because all this is still going on in the lawsuit in the courts.
Not to mention, the CIA is a pretty powerful organization. People rarely want to come across them.
But on the other hand, the DOJ has also promised not to return the records to the Senate, like Burr demanded, until it's settled in the court. They just, okay, the courts are going to handle this. We're not going to do anything with it until then.
Like, it's going to matter, though, because, I mean, there's very few cases where people have successfully sued the U.S. government.
Well, it's happened.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now.
So we've all seen the TV shows about forensic analysis. As good as it is, and as superior as it is to eyewitness testimony, it just isn't as rigorously scientific as it needs to be, and certainly not like it's portrayed on shows like Law & Order.
Oh yeah, Penn & Teller did a whole episode about this on their old bullshit TV show.
Yeah, and I mean, if you did some science like this, and then tried to get the scientific community at large to accept it on anything else, they'd laugh at you, they'd say, where's your peer review? Where's your independent corroboration?
Now, don't get us wrong. There's some good scientific investigations, such as DNA and such, but a lot of the stuff that they do use often is pretty bogus stuff.
Yeah, and case in point is hair analysis. The FBI and the Justice Department have now acknowledged that hair analysis is so badly flawed that in almost every trial where it was given in the two decades before 2000, the testimony about it ended up being misleading.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So the FBI has 28 examiners in their hair comparison unit. 26 of them were found to have overstated forensic matches in ways that favored prosecutors in more than 95% of the 268 trials they reviewed so far.
Yeah. Yeah, hair analysis is just like, it's just like fingerprints. You know, so many people think, but no two fingerprints are the same. So if we find fingerprints, we can prove a match. But there have been forensic scientists that have said, yes, fingerprints can help us identify a person, but that's only if we get a very clear and almost complete print, which almost never happens.
Yeah, if you've got a partial and it's dirty or smudged or whatever, it's going to be less accurate.
Not to mention, even if it is 100% there, it doesn't prove the person committed the crime. It just proved that at some point that person handled the object.
Well, and it also goes to the question of what is a match. I mean, like, one of the things they did for a long time was blood type matches, which, I mean, there are only 8 blood types.
Yeah.
I have the most common blood type, A positive. So you can say, oh, well, this blood type was A positive. It must have been Shane Killian because there are millions of other people it could apply to.
Yeah.
But that still technically constitutes a match. Whereas if the blood found was B negative, you know it couldn't possibly have been mine and therefore I could be excluded. So that's the thing. Not being a match will exclude the person, but being a match won't necessarily confirm it. And yet the perception is it's the other way around. You know, they say, oh, it's a match. Oh, that definitely means it's him. It's not a match. Well, we just couldn't confirm it, but it's still, you know, it's the other way around.
Yeah, in my honest opinion, the only reliable scientific thing that they can use for gathering evidence is DNA, and even then they fudge it up.
Yeah, we covered a story one time of where they were trying to clear a guy because he was convicted on DNA evidence where there was a single marker that was wrong and everything else was the same. And they said, oh, well, it's a 1 in a bazillion chance that it would be that close when even one being off means it couldn't possibly be him. And it turns out the guy who really committed the crime was the guy's cousin, which is why the DNA was so similar.
That's the problem with modern day trials is that both the prosecution and the defense attorney always seem to want to rely on just one damning piece of evidence, when in reality, often you need a lot of evidence from a lot of different sources to get it. Like, for instance, you know, there's nothing wrong with an eyewitness testimony if there's other evidence in there that supports it. You know, the problem is when they base, like, a conviction solely on the testimony alone and people still fall for it.
And they do it without the jury understanding what the flaws are with eyewitness testimony, because the public perception is that eyewitness testimony is like this big gold standard, and if the person says that they're certain and they know it's him, that's strong. Actually, the more certain the eyewitness is, the more suspicious you should be of it. No one is that certain. Human memory is just too faulty.
Oh, yeah. That's very common in rape cases, believe it or not. There's many people, you know, who have been falsely convicted of rape because the woman was sure about it, and then later evidence reveals that she lied and made it up.
Or a lot of times it isn't even that they lie, it's that the police catch someone, and psychologically it's like, please let it be this guy. It has to be the guy. It must be the guy, because the alternative is too horrible.
Yeah, in fact, I know several people that have taken on law enforcement and criminal psychology, and a lot of them have flat out said the most unreliable piece of evidence that's even more unreliable than an eyewitness testimony is a confession, because people think, but if he was innocent, why would he confess? Because have you been interrogated by a police officer? It's scary. In fact, my friend Jason said he once knew a guy, you know, who was talking to that. So as an experiment, they said, okay, fine, then I've gone through police interrogation training. You don't want to do something? And at the end of the experiment, to prove this guy wrong, he actually convinced the guy to confess to a minor crime. I think it was like stealing a watch or something, even though he didn't even touch the watch.
Yeah. That's the thing. They are so unreliable, and yet they are so prejudicial.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah, people fail to realize police interrogation isn't, you know, they're asking you kindly. You know, often they have a guy constantly telling you, I know you did this, fess up right now, you know, and they pull that off. And eventually, many people later say, I was just so scared and under pressure that I finally just said whatever they wanted me to say.
Well, and we also covered a while back how they can, even without intending to, implant a false memory of committing the crime with just 3 one-hour sessions.
So, bad testimonies and bad forensic evidence.
So, the government is being assisted by the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers together with the Innocence Project. And this includes 32 defendants that were sentenced to death. Of those, 14 have already been executed or have died in prison.
Well, then by the logic of many of those prosecutors, they need to be on death row, because if you kill an innocent person, that automatically gets you a death penalty.
Well, the thing about it is, just because the hair analysis isn't right doesn't necessarily mean they were an innocent person that was convicted. There might have been all sorts of other evidence as well.
Yeah.
But that's what they're doing. They're going and looking through all of these, and they're notifying federal and state prosecutors and defendants and defense attorneys to look through these cases and check for these things to see if there are grounds for appeals, and they've already exonerated four of them.
It's funny because people accuse us of wanting to let those evil criminals go. We're not saying that. It's just that when the United States prison system has a very high rate of people who are innocent or have only committed victimless crimes in prison, you know, it kind of makes us a little angry and skeptical at the criminal justice system.
Well, and every innocent person convicted is a guilty person who's gone free.
Oh, yeah, but the police aren't looking for him because they assume, oh, we got him. We got him, so we don't have to worry about it.
But they're looking at the hair, and they're also looking at something that's been shown to be severely flawed, which is bite mark comparisons.
Oh, yeah. All you're basically doing is comparing two pictures to one another. That's art, not science.
Well, and again, if you see it on Law and Order, you see these nicely little defined teeth mark, and they take a mold of the person's teeth and look at that, it fits perfectly. No, it's basically this mushed out bruise, and oh, well, I guess that sort of fits.
Yeah.
And they've estimated that this could have contributed to wrongful convictions in more than a quarter of 329 cases since 1989 where the defendant has been exonerated by DNA evidence. So Peter Neufeld, co-founder of the Innocence Project, said, quote, "The FBI's three-decade use of microscopic hair analysis to incriminate defendants was a complete disaster. We need an exhaustive investigation that looks at how the FBI, state governments that relied on examiners trained by the FBI, and the courts allowed this to happen and why it wasn't stopped much sooner."
Then again, the U.S. Criminal justice system, it's rigged so criminal justice people who are trying to do their jobs get punished and the bad ones get free.
And I'm going to have to agree with another senator, this time Richard Blumenthal. He called for the FBI and the Justice Department to notify the defendants in all cases, all 2,500 of them, even if the case is still ongoing, that this problem is there. Quote, "These findings are appalling and chilling in their indictment of our criminal justice system, not only for potentially innocent defendants who have been wrongly imprisoned and even executed, but for prosecutors who have relied on fabricated and false evidence despite their intentions to faithfully enforce the law."
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand, you know, not all prosecutors are these, you know, assholes who just want to throw people away. There's many criminal justice prosecutors who literally want to see justice served. The problem is that sometimes they're a little too passionate about their job, you know, meaning that they're so passionate about their work that they think that they're unquestionable and that whatever they say is correct.
Well, it's so easy to empathize with the victims, and it's so easy to get a moral outrage on those things that you end up with the same kind of bias I was talking about earlier. Oh, here's a guy. Please let it be him. Dear God, it must be him.
Oh, yeah. There was also a really sad case I read. It was on 48 Hours Hard Evidence, where a guy was convicted of murdering his wife, even though there was no evidence which proved he did it. And one of the excuses people said that said we assumed he was guilty was because he wasn't acting emotional during the trial, even though this guy had a mild form of autism, so he doesn't have a facial expression. And not to mention, he said in a testimony he had a really tough life and tough childhood, and he had been exposed to so many bad things in his life that he kind of got used to it. You know, that's another thing I hate is when people say, oh, the guy's not emotional, so therefore he's guilty. Not really. There's a difference between not showing your emotions and being, you know, unempathetic.
The FBI has also admitted that before 2012, there weren't even any written standards guiding their experts as to how they should do this. And this review confirmed that many FBI experts would testify to this high degree of certainty about matches using incomplete or misleading statistics. And in fact, there is no accepted research at all on how often hair from different people may appear the same to these tests.
This has happened. People get accused of a crime, you know, but there's some evidence that says there's a good chance that he's innocent, but then the FBI comes in and says, oh no, I can guarantee you that he's guilty, and I know it. It's like, but the evidence says otherwise. It says, yeah, well, I'm with the FBI. The FBI overrides the evidence.
Wow.
Yep. That actually happened. That was actually one of the cases that Penn and Teller, you know, pointed out. You know, this one guy was accused of raping a young boy, but the DNA evidence didn't match it. But the reason why he got convicted anyway was because an FBI guy was called in and he told the judge, I can guarantee you that he's guilty. I'm with the FBI. I know this.
Well, it's like we covered the case, and I forget the guy's name, but if you look back through the archives, you can find it. There was a guy in Texas who was sentenced to death for burning his house down and killing his family when every single piece of evidence said that it was an accident that happened exactly the way he said it did. So they executed him with all this evidence that he was innocent. And when this one TV station interviewed the prosecutor in the case, who by that point had become, I think he was the attorney general for the state of Texas, he had said that, well, even if he was innocent, he still deserved the death penalty because he was an atheist and had tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Another really dumb excuse, you know, for, like, especially if a person dies, like, in a fire or a tragedy, is they go, well, it's suspicious because why didn't he fight for his very life to find her? It's like, I just want to tell those guys, have you ever been in a fire before?
Have you ever spoken to a fireman and asked them what to do? They will tell you specifically not to do that.
Yeah, if your house is on fire and you try to run in there, you know, to save your loved ones without the protection that the firemen are wearing, all that's going to happen is 9 out of 10 times you're going to have 2 charred corpses instead of one. My sister's ex-husband, you know, used to be a volunteer firefighter, and he once told me a story about how there was one fire he was in which was so hot his faceplate was actually melting.
Yeah, my uncle was fire chief, and one thing a lot of people don't know, they know about the fire can burn you, and they know that the smoke inhalation can asphyxiate you. What people seem to be largely unaware of is that there are some toxic fumes in there that will mess up your mind. And there have been cases of a person just trying to claw their way out the door. You see, like, the claw marks where they were trying to get out, and the whole time they were clawing on the wrong side of the door. The doorknob was on the other side, but because their mind was so messed up by these fumes, they didn't think, oh, the doorknob's on the other side, I should try that.
It's one of those things where, you know, I mean, I understand it's sad, you know, and I'm not saying you should forget about your loved ones, but when it comes to a disaster like that, you need to think with your brain instead of your heart.
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse. Or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide the means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv.
And now it's time to de-eulogize this week's biggest bogon emitter. And I warned you the presidential candidates will be taking it more often now, but now Hillary has a twofer. She's always been one to pay lip service to charter schools while actively working to undermine them. She gets it this week for spreading more easily debunked bogosity. And this was in South Carolina when she was campaigning, and she sat down for a town hall with journalist Ronald Martin, hosted by the South Carolina Legislative Black Caucus. Martin brought up the subject of charter schools and said that a poll in South Carolina among black parents found that most of them were interested in enrolling their children in charters just because they weren't satisfied with the government schools in the state they were in. And Clinton's response was, quote, "I have for many years now, about 30 years, supported the idea of charter schools, but not as a substitute for the public schools, but as a supplement for the public schools." So she's going the whole alt-med route. Oh, no. This isn't instead of medicine. It's just in addition to it, to complement it.
Yeah, typical newspeak.
Charter schools can have a purpose, but, you know, there are good charter schools and there are bad charter schools, just like there are good public schools and bad public schools. Yeah, the difference is you can close down the bad charter schools.
Kind of reminds me of this one thing, you know, where there was some people reviewing the documentary Finding Superman, and they criticized the movie claiming that it assumes that charter schools, you know, are better than public schools, and it cites, like, this one poll which shows some people are mostly disappointed in charter schools, but first of all, that's just a poll. That's not an actual accurate survey. But second of all, and one person pointed this out in the comments, there's not enough charter schools to get a proper competition going on. And also, as you just said, if a charter school is doing bad, they can fire the bad teachers or in some cases shut them down. You can't do that with a government public school.
Yeah, this happened a few years ago when a liberal friend of mine was trying to convince me this is why charter schools are bad. And I forget all the details, but there was all this mismanagement going on, and one of the officials was like skimming off the top and taking the money himself. It just really drove the charter school into the ground, and it ended up closing. And I'm like, no. This is a reason why you do want charter schools. And I easily found story after story after story of the same kind of thing happening with government school districts. The difference is those schools didn't shut down. But you'd better believe all the charters are looking at that one going, uh-oh, we need to avoid that. How do we avoid that so we can keep running?
Yeah, that's a good thing. You know, with charter schools, if they're doing a bad job, you can fire the bad people, or in cases on fire and extremists. But if there's a principal, which is, you know, taking all this money and walking away with it, which, by the way, happens a lot more often than people think. If you even talk about doing something, there's going to be teacher unions outside of your office, you know, demanding your head on a silver plate.
And something else that people should realize is, usually, in most places, if you're lucky, you have a choice between one government school and one charter school.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's still a duopoly. I mean, technically, in North Carolina, you know, I can send my kids to any charter school in the state, but the only one nearby is Lincoln Charter School, which is a really good school. I'm happy with it, but I mean, you know, I'm not going to drive back and forth 2 hours there and back every day to take my daughter to school.
Not to mention, there's some charter schools which are so small, but they have such high demand because they're not allowed, you know, to properly expand, you know, by the state. They have to hold a lottery just to accept people in.
Yeah, they put caps on it and everything. And the state of North Carolina recently changed how the lottery works with charter schools. Before, if you were in the lottery, whatever number in the lottery you were just in line, and then next year you moved up the line and so forth until you got in. Now they changed it so that you redo the lottery from scratch every year. So you could have been trying for 5 years to get your kid into charter school and still going into the lottery with no better chance than someone who's coming in for the first time.
Yeah, you know, people fail to realize one of the reasons why charter schools aren't doing as good as they could be doing is because even though they are being allowed to exist, the government is still doing everything in their ability to regulate them to death.
So here's where we get to Clinton's real bogosity, quote, "Most charter schools, I don't want to say everyone, but most charter schools, they don't take the hardest to teach kids, or if they do, they don't keep them." Do I need to say it? Outright lie.
And even if it was true, is the U.S. public school system any better? Reminds me of this one guy who was interviewed by John Stossel, Ben Chavis. He used to run Indian charter schools, and people always accused him of only taking in rich kids, but he flat out told John Stossel in the interview, he says, "Here's what I say to people who say that. You give me the worst performing students, black, white, Latino, pink polka dot, and within a year, we will make them outperform the local schools."
Yeah, and that's what the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools said in response to Clinton, quote, "There is no difference in the percentage of English language learner students served between charter and non-charter public schools. 37% of charter schools have at least 75% of their students in poverty, as compared to 23% of non-charter schools. Nationally, in the 2013-14 school year, charter schools served a higher percentage of low-income students, 57%, than district-run schools, 52%, and have better outcomes." And I'll just jump in to add, that's also usually with less money per pupil.
Oh, yeah. They spend, like, I don't remember the exact quote, but, like, I think it was, like, the public schools spend, like, $25,000 per kids. You know, charter schools only spend, like, $10,000, and yet they do, and yet as a whole, they do better.
I don't think it's quite that bad here in North Carolina, but the charter schools get something like, I think, $7,500 per kid, whereas the state schools get, like, $10,000. But I think the state schools also get that extra $35,000 a year for special needs children, which isn't available to the charter schools. And then, of course, you have all of this bond money that doesn't go to them. I mean, they just do all sorts of funky accounting to make sure they don't pay charter schools what they're supposed to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Every time a school administrator comes up and says, "The reason why we're doing so, why we're falling behind is lack of money," that is BS.
Oh, yeah. But, well, Hillary said something like that. We'll get to it later, but let me go back to what the Charter School Alliance said. 2015 NAEP scores show that in Los Angeles, there was dramatically better student performance in charter schools than with district-run schools. Proficiency rates worth triple that of non-charter schools. Los Angeles charter schools demographics are 75% low-income students and 85% of students have minority status. In New York City, charter public schools do a better job of retaining students with disabilities than their non-charter public school counterparts. Specifically, 53% of charter school kindergartners with disabilities were still in the same schools 4 years later, compared with 49% of non-charter schools. And they also point out, quote, many research studies have found that students in charter schools do better in school than their traditional school peers. Charter schools do a better job of teaching low-income students, minority students, and students who are still learning English than traditional schools. And charter school students are more likely to graduate from high school, go on to college, stay in college, and have higher earnings in early adulthood.
But the public education system doesn't want that.
So back to Hillary's comments, quote, the public schools are often in a no-win situation because they do thankfully take everybody and they don't get the resources or the help and support they need to be able to take care of every child's education.
BS.
Yeah, we just pointed out the charter schools are doing better for less money.
Yeah.
And yes, that includes these poor kids that she claims aren't being represented that are.
Oh, yeah. From what I heard, you know, I mean, like, the way Ben Chavis, you know, made his school work, he tried to work with the students and he made the education more personal, whereas the public education just makes it a one-size-fits-all attitude, completely ignoring the fact that some kids, you know, learn differently than all that. And this really shows to me because, you know, I went to a special ed program in my high school and I hated it. I despised it.
So she said, quote, I want parents to be able to exercise choice within the public school system, not outside of it. Well, then why not give them their choice of their district schools? Like right now, if I wanted to send my kid to high school, I'd have to send him to East Lincoln. Why not give me the choice of sending him to North Lincoln as well? Why not? You know, she's not practicing what she's preaching.
Yep. As this one guy, I really wish I remembered this guy's name, but he's an outspoken critic of the government monopolized school that says, you know, you can cry, whine, and beg and plead all you want to your district, but your kid is stuck where he is because of your zip code. If you're not in, you know, the district address, you got to go to the school that's in your district. That means if your school's lackluster, you either send them there, you homeschool them, or you send them to an expensive private school.
And listen to this, quote, I am still a firm believer that the public school system is one of the real pillars of our democracy and it is a path for opportunity.
Yeah, and that explains why the United States does behind in test scores behind the Czech Republic, South Korea, and many other European states.
And why the test scores have been languishing while per pupil spending goes up, 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 up.
Which, by the way, that's another thing people get wrong about Europe. You know, some politicians like to portray Europe as being, but Europe practices a system that we're copying and their students are flourishing. What are they doing wrong that we're not? Well, here's the thing. The majority of European nations, yes, they do have a public education, but they also have school choice and they run their schools like a business, meaning that if a school does terribly and it doesn't improve, you know, within a certain time limit, they shut it down.
As opposed to, and this is the quote I was mentioning earlier, quote, I am also fully aware that there are a lot of substandard public schools, but part of the reason for that is that policymakers and local politicians will not fund schools in poor areas that take care of poor children to the level they need to be. No, that's where it goes when you have a failing school. They go, oh, we're failing because we don't have enough money. Give us more money. And ends up being a race to the bottom. They're incentivizing failure.
Yeah, you know, imagine if like a government program or administration ran like a business, you know, I mean, imagine if you went to a restaurant and they served you a really bad meal, you know, the steak was burnt to a crisp, you know, the dessert they served you, you know, was melted by the time it arrived, you know, the salad was bland. And when you complain saying that was a terrible meal, they say, well, that's because we don't make enough money. What would you respond? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, say what you like about the big corporations. Whenever a department is failing in a corporation, they cut their funding.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't pull up with this, well, it's because we don't have enough money. Nope.
Yep.
You're cutting your funding and you're not getting it back until you've proven that you can do a better job.
Yep. If you're not doing your job, why should you get extra money? But of course, they'll find some typical excuse.
And Clinton didn't mention vouchers in this speech, but the Washington Post does point out that she has consistently been against those too, so...
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I actually have seen some politicians that said, oh, I'm all for, you know, people choosing what their education is, but they refuse, you know, to fund voucher programs and all that. One of my teachers, when I brought up the voucher program, said, vouchers are a bad idea because they're public money for private school.
Nah.
Not really.
The money follows the child. That's how it is in Europe.
Well, yeah, you know, it's attached to you.
But that's what I think always gets lost in these discussions. They're like, you know, charter schools are better, private schools are better, no, public schools are better for this and that. I don't think parents care which one does better overall. They just want to look at the schools in their areas and be able to say, okay, which one is the best one? That's the one I want to send my kid to. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's not about who does the better job, you know, it's what's the best option do I have? That's what parents want. They don't want to send their kids, you know, to those hoity-toity private schools. They say, look, I just want a list of all my options and I want the ability to choose what I can go to.
So all of that makes Hillary Clinton this week's biggest bogon emitter.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
And now let's garrot this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And here we have another repeat offender, this time the TSA, which happened at Miami International Airport when flights were delayed for hours, traffic got backed up outside the terminal, while armed police in riot gear boarded a flight. Because of the TSA's actions on Tuesday, it was a flight from Miami International Airport to Bridgetown. It was ordered stopped. Two security checkpoints were shut down. Armed police in riot gear boarded the plane, ordered passengers to put their hands on their heads, and of course people were taking video of this and putting it on social media. The TSA ordered the gates locked down until this suspicious passenger and his suspicious cargo was located, and during it all, 50 incoming and outgoing flights were stopped. Two concourses were shut down for nearly 3 hours, 9 flights were diverted, and traffic outside was so backed up that passengers said that they got out of their cars and just walked the rest of the way to the ramp with their luggage. And who was this dangerous passenger and what was his horrendously dangerous cargo? He was a dentist who was carrying dental supplies such as fillings.
Oh, yep.
And he went right through the TSA checkpoint. So they found the guy, questioned him, searched his bag, and let him go. They're not charging him with anything.
Yep.
Apparently fillings aren't bad. They're one things that aren't banned by the TSA.
Well, yeah, what are you going to do with them? Yeah. How are you going to threaten them? Are you going to say, I demand you to fly me to Canada or else I'm going to give you a really bad dental job?
But despite the fact that officers determined there was no threat, the TSA is saying that the problem was their screening wasn't good enough and that's why they didn't catch the bag on the way through.
Oh, look, I'm not saying I don't want airport security. You know, I want it, but is it necessary to shut down an entire, you know, airport just for one little threat?
This isn't security.
Yeah.
I have no idea what to call this, but it isn't security. It doesn't make us any safer.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've criticized, you know, the TSA and some people have said, well, the TSA's flawed, but what is the other alternative? You know, it's like, well, there's plenty of, you know, agencies out there that offer airline security. And you know what? Want to know another reason why they're better is because they're less intrusive. And second of all, if there is, you know, a suspected violation, they don't call red alert and shut down the entire airport. They just quietly take the individual away, you know, question him for a few minutes. And if it's determined he's safe, they let him go back on.
Yeah, this is security theater. It's all about making a show. See how safe we're keeping you?
Yeah.
So all of that makes the TSA this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this I'm Peter Graves edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Chris Hangartner for joining me.
Good to be here.
Until next time, here's a quote from Bruce Schneier. More people are killed every year by pigs than sharks, which shows you how good we are at evaluating risk. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.
Christmas time is coming, and the most classic of Christmas stories is A Christmas Carol. But how much do you know about the original Charles Dickens novella? Have you dismissed it as a children's book with one-dimensional characters amounting to nothing but platitudes and cliches? Maybe your appreciation of the book was even muted by those dry, boring, annotated books they made you read in school. My book, the sarcastically annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, uses both facts and humor to present the book in a way you probably haven't seen it before. Giving praise when deserved and beratement when warranted, this book is put in the perspective of its time and shows a dimensional, multi-layered Ebenezer Scrooge from start to finish. Skepticism, history, and even economics are employed to show the book in relation to today in an easily accessible format. Appreciate the Christmas of your youth all over again. Get The Sarcastically Annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, available at Amazon and on PDF as well.